You're listening to the Common Descent Podcast.
Hello, Will.
Hello, David.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Silver Screen Science, a series here on the Common Descent Podcast where we talk about the science of movies, not just nitpicking the good and the bad, but exploring how science is portrayed in film. This is the third of our three-part series this month, April of 2024, where we are discussing movies on the topic of sharks.
Yep.
We started with Meg 2, The Trench, because it came out very recently. Then we hopped 24 years back in time and did Deep Blue Sea, which is a whole lot of fun. And this time, we have hopped exactly another 24 years back in time.
I didn't realize that.
To the mid-70s to discuss the shark movie.
Yep.
The shark movie. This episode of Silver Screen Science, at long last, we are discussing Jaws.
I'm so happy. I've been waiting for this for so long.
We've been talking about doing a Jaws episode for a long, long time. It has always been what... Let's do a shark series.
Yes.
So that we can talk about Jaws.
Yes.
When we decided to do Meg 2, we figured, yeah, let's do Meg 2 and then the two good shark movies.
Yep. That's the real reason we did this theme. Meg 2 was just a nicely timed excuse.
The way that this works is we are going to talk about the film, specifically looking at how science and scientific topics are portrayed on screen, with a special emphasis, as usual, on the creatures, or in this case, the creature, in the movie, sharks. Jaws is a particularly interesting one to look at because it is one of the classic movies of this type.
Yes.
Basically, any shark movie from the last 50 years is pulling in some way or another from this film.
Yeah, and Jaws was not pulling from really any other shark film before it, because there wasn't one quite like it beforehand. So it really is the one that kind of laid the groundwork for shark cinema as we know it.
Yes, and sharks in popular culture broadly.
Yeah.
If you haven't yet and are so inclined, check out our episodes on Meg 2 and Deep Blue Sea, which came out shortly before this. Also, along with each Silver Screen Science episode, we put out an episode on our Patreon for our patrons called More Thoughts, where we talk about not the science-y stuff, but just our personal thoughts and feelings. So in this case, if you want to hear us gush about Jaws, head over to Patreon and listen to that. From this point on, there be spoilers. We will be talking about the entire movie. If you haven't seen Jaws, or if it's been a while...
Or you just have somehow not heard what happens in Jaws.
Yes, if you've managed to avoid having Jaws spoiled for you, they don't get a bigger boat. That's the problem.
The twist.
Spoilers from here on out. Jaws is a movie from 1975, directed by Steven Spielberg. Will, if you would please, describe the plot of Jaws.
Happily. Jaws is a story of a small town on Amity Island, which is somewhere in the northeast, and follows the town's new sheriff, Sheriff Brody, who is dealing with the fact that a series of deaths on the water are being potentially attributed to a shark. He has conflict with the mayor and local officials on closing the beach because it is their main summertime tourist season, and they don't want to lose all that money. And because of their resistance to close the beach, more people die. Finally, they pay the local shark hunter enough for him to go out with the help of Brody and the oceanographer who has joined them, the marine biologist. The three go out looking for the shark, find it, much to their chagrin. And Brody is finally able to take out the shark with an exploding oxygen tank.
Yes. Obviously, the reason to talk about Jaws, the reason for this whole series, is to discuss primarily the portrayal of sharks in film. Whenever we talk about creatures on screen, we are often discussing this theme of monsterification, which comes up in a lot of movies like this, where movies will take an animal, what should be just a regular old animal, and give it features or behaviors that are more suitable for a movie monster than for a real living creature. Sharks, as we've discussed before, tend to get it pretty bad.
Yes.
compared to most other animals when they are portrayed in film or TV or whatnot. Jaws is a really interesting one to discuss in this regard because, again, it is the classic shark movie. It put into place a lot of popular expectations of sharks. So let's dive in, as it were, and talk about the sharks of Jaws. There are, I say sharks with a plural, there are technically multiple sharks in this movie.
Yes, there's many mentioned, like that lots of stories get told by about other sharks.
Mm-hmm.
We see a tiger shark that gets captured by the local fishermen that go out to try to collect the bounty that's been put out on Jaws.
And there's this tiger shark that is strung up and then later opened up.
Yes, which I believe is an actual tiger shark.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's not a model. The big shark in Jaws is an animatronic.
Yes, and there's like, I think, three different ones. One that is just a head, one that could swim, and one that was on rails.
But the tiger shark that is shown there, I believe, is just a dead shark.
Otherwise, you did an amazing job making a model dead shark. they have an actual tiger shark, which they identify correctly.
It is a tiger shark.
I remember the first time I was old enough to watch it and catch that, I was like, oh, good job, movie. Like, and they name, like, real sharks and real shark names throughout. They mentioned thresher sharks a couple of times.
Bull sharks.
Mm-hmm, makos. So they actually do a really good job at nodding to shark diversity and like the different features of some of the sharks.
Yep. We see the tiger shark gets cut open to examine its gut contents. There's a couple of fish in there. There's a license plate.
And a tin can.
And a tin can, because that's the trope for tiger sharks is that they'll swallow anything.
Which is one of those, and we've mentioned this before, it's a weird trope because that's based off an actual tiger shark that was found with a license plate, and other sharks have been found with metal because they sense electrical discharges, and metal in salt water can tingle those senses and get them interested in it. So they can bite it and eat it because tiger sharks are notoriously not picky eaters.
Mm-hmm.
If it's able to be bitten, if they can get their mouth around it, they'll usually try to take a bite out of stuff. So those are based on real things, but now it has become a trope of if a shark's stomach ever gets pumped or cut open or a cartoon shark throws up, there's going to be a tin can or license plate in it.
Well, it's very much the way that sizes in films are portrayed. Case in point, in this movie, the main shark is a great white shark that is said in the movie to be either 20 or 25 feet long, depending on whether you believe Hooper or Quint.
Yes.
More. There are, I believe, great whites that get up to like 20 feet.
Yes. And that's like the max that's ever been for sure documented. Typically, they get up to like 16 feet is the usual max size. The robot was 25 feet, so that is the size of the shark we're seeing.
It's a big shark. It's a big fake shark. Movies will often do that, where it's like, yeah, we've got a crocodile or a shark on the screen, and they're always the outlier maximum size, because it's a movie and you want to pick the most exciting version of it. The license plate gets the same sort of things. And yes, this has been seen.
Yes.
But in movies, you would be led to believe that every tiger shark is eating license plates and every great white shark is 20 feet long.
Yep. Which is particularly funny to me because, like, are license plates a regular thing that people are littering with?
Yeah, I don't know how you get that many license plates out in the ocean.
Yeah, like, are people just chucking those constantly? I mean, I guess every time you have to, you know, if you register multiple cars, but typically you just move your license plate. So, like,
I do like the way the license plate is used here. Is the scientist is pulling stuff out of the gut, and he says, as I suspected, it came up from the south, and throws a Louisiana license plate out.
Yep.
That's pretty funny.
Yep.
The main shark is a big great white shark. This is the main featured creature of the film, and it is the monster of the movie.
Yes. They never name it in the movie, but just for anyone who's wondering, the name Bruce gets thrown around because that was the name for the robot.
Yes, the animatronic, the model, was named Bruce.
Which is why Bruce in Finding Nemo gets named Bruce.
Yes.
It's a nod to Jaws. So, Bruce.
Bruce. This shark, it's checking a lot of those boxes. It's gigantic. Mm-hmm. It's shown to be extremely strong.
Yes.
Like, big and strong. It takes three barrels down with it. At one point, it tears a pier apart.
Yep. It's pulling the boat around.
It's pulling the boat around. It's also smashing up the boat a bunch. It is voracious. It eats several people over the course of the film. It is determined to go after our protagonist. It is chasing their boat at a certain point. It is doing a lot of those things that we associate with movie monster creatures.
They allude to it being a smarter or more clever shark, mm-hmm. that it seems to have will and intent behind what it's doing.
Right.
At least to some degree. They never like outright call out vengeance or anything.
Sure.
But that it is actively targeting them because they came after it, sort of thing.
Right. And by the end of the movie, it is them versus the shark.
Yes.
And the shark is very much portrayed as though it is in on that. Like, mm-hmm. yes, one of us will survive. We are fighting until either the shark or the people are gone. The shark is also the source of the main tension across the movie, which in much of the movie extends beyond this shark and becomes just about a fear of sharks in general.
Yes.
The movie very much starts with a person got attacked by a shark, and this gradually leads to full-blown panic. People are afraid of going in the water. People are... they might want to close the beaches down and everything. And in all this discussion, you hear lots of these descriptions of, well, yeah, there's a shark. Obviously, it will eat people if it's here.
Yes.
There's even a point where our oceanographer guy says this is a killing machine.
Yes.
All they do is swim and eat and make little baby sharks.
Yep. And it's interesting that like the kind of 1-2, because there's lots of that talk about we should be on alert because it's a shark in general. But then many times also portraying that this shark in particular is unusual.
Right.
Like, this is a monstery shark. Most sharks would not be this bad.
Right. It is kind of trying to do both. And I think what it ends up sort of portraying in the end is sharks are bad. This shark is worse.
Yeah.
Is sort of the main thrust of the film.
Well, and it's interesting because it's got that feeling to it, but it also has a lot of genuine shark facts
mm-hmm.
in it. And one of the main characters is a shark lover. He's a shark researcher.
Yes.
And says he started studying sharks because his boat got attacked when he accidentally hooked a young thresher shark.
Yes.
And that's what got him interested.
And then made him fall in love with sharks, and he has been a shark researcher ever since.
Which is intriguing to me because the movie definitely has this feeling of like, yeah, you should be fearful of sharks.
Mm-hmm.
But at least to me, never gives the sharks are evil feeling. Right. Sharks are natural and they're a normal part of the ocean and they're fascinating, but yeah, if a shark is around, you should be careful. You should be potentially afraid, which part of why it's so interesting to me is that for the background, if anyone knows, this was a book before it was a movie.
Yes, the year beforehand, a book by Peter Benchley.
And the book was inspired by a famous shark attack in New Jersey that they reference in the movie.
Yep.
Series of shark attacks that happened. And the author just thought it would make a good story.
Mm-hmm.
Had no intent of demonizing sharks. And did a lot of shark research. So that's why there's so many shark factoids in the movie and in the book and everything. Like,
yes,
it is full of actual information about sharks. The intent was not to demonize sharks.
Yes. And the movie doesn't lean fully into that. It feels, to use the comparison we use every time, it feels similar to Jurassic Park, where you've got, these are the dangerous animals. Some of them are very monstery and are going to be attacking and killing people. Here are some characters who love them.
Yes.
And who appreciate them and who help us to understand that they are beautiful parts of nature. This movie has a little bit of that with the character of Hooper who loves sharks. The main plot of the movie and all the character motivations in this movie are people are being killed by a shark and now we have to go kill this shark.
Yes.
It also brings up the concept of what they call a rogue shark.
Yes.
To sort of characterize this is an unusual shark, which, as I understand it, is at one point was an idea about a way that sharks might behave.
Which I believe, if I remember the history of it right, because I looked this up when I was working at the aquarium. Mm-hmm. This was all stuff that I wanted to know. I believe also connects back to that Jersey Shore shark attack. This was in 1916. There were, I think, 5 deaths or at least attacks,
mm-hmm.
within a very short period, like a couple of weeks, and were attributed to a bull shark. And this sparked an idea of, could a large shark effectively, and this in very, you know, layman's terms, get a taste for human flesh?
Right.
And then
keep coming back for more.
Stake out a feeding ground where it now regularly returns to feed.
Right. And that's how they explain this shark in this movie.
And it's kind of got the whole using a Deinonychus skeleton for Velociraptor in Jurassic Park, where it was based off of something that was put out and then refuted later on.
Right.
But when the movie was made, it was actually an idea. When the book was written, that was actually a considered idea for a little bit to try to explain, could this be possible? Mm-hmm. Is this a thing that would make sense in sharks? And since then has time and time again to be found, no, we really don't see any sort of territorial behavior. And they use the term territoriality in the movie.
Yep.
That's never been found in sharks. And when the author learned that, they tried to, Peter Benchley, tried to undo and say, don't believe my book. I was wrong to put that in there as fact because it wasn't confirmed. So even the movie, things being said in the movie aren't just made up myths.
Right. It is pulling from real scientific discussions about sharks.
Yeah, which is kind of really interesting. It's a monstery hypothesis, but it was actually proposed for a real as a real answer to a real event.
Yes. So it feels like it's worth saying at this point in this discussion, particularly for this movie, that this is not how sharks act.
No.
Sharks are not staking out territories at the beach. They're not going after several people because they got a taste for it. They're not pulling piers apart. They're not going to chase after a boat.
Well, and
none of these are the actions of actual wild animals. This is what you do with your movie creature.
Yes. And that shark attacks, typically shark bites do not result in eatings.
Right. Because that's typically not why the bite happens.
Yes.
The sharks aren't typically hunting and stalking people. A shark might come across a person and get interested or investigate or
confused.
Think it might be something food. But usually after the first bite, the shark figures out what's going on.
Yeah, the way I used to put it when I was at the aquarium is a lot of those instances that we call shark attacks where a person gets bitten once. In many of those scenarios, if the shark wanted to eat that person, there's not much that person would have been able to do when it's a big tiger or a great white shark. Like, if it wanted to eat them, it would have, but they don't.
Mm-hmm.
It is very rare that we see even second bites.
Yep.
The research since the time that the book and this movie have been made has shown that most attacks fit much more in the model of mistaken identity, investigation, or sometimes like the most common ones are like spearfishers who accidentally get too close to a shark or antagonize a shark for some reason. Usually it's our fault.
Yes.
Most documented attacks, the human approached the shark for some, either we hooked it or we went up to it.
Yes. Well, very much like snake bites.
Exactly.
But most of the time it's because the person got too close, often on purpose.
Yep.
So in terms of portrayal of sharks, sort of the common tropes of sharks, Jaws is hitting a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
Sharks as man-eaters, sharks as dead-eyed killers. There is absolutely the description of sharks famously in this movie. It does the fin above the water thing.
Mm-hmm.
Although it is interesting in this movie that as opposed to the other movies we talked about where the fin above the water is like a dramatic move by the shark. Yes, I'm coming in and hunting. In this movie, when we see the fin above the water, it usually is because the shark is either in shallow waters or near the surface because it's around the boat or being pulled up by the barrels or something.
Yeah, it's coming up to something at the surface.
Yeah, which, and you know, it's worth pointing out that, yeah, if a shark is near the surface, the fin is the first thing that's going to be above the water.
Because it's on top.
So it doesn't feel like it's doing it for dramatic effect. It obviously, in some cases, it is being used that way.
Yes, it is being used in the film for dramatic effect. It at no point feels like the shark that Jaws is doing it to be dramatic.
The shark isn't going, oh, they're gonna be so scared.
Which both Meg and Deep Blue Sea have moments where it's like, the shark did that on purpose.
Yes, absolutely.
Like that
this is the shark's move.
Yes, I'm going to rattle them. This is going to throw them off their game when they see this thing coming. The other note on the fin that I appreciate in this one is it's one of the only shark movies I can ever think of that shows the tail fin.
Yes. That the shows, dorsal fin and the tail fin.
Because if you're a shark like a great white shark, you have this big semicircle, crescent tail because you're a fast swimming shark that stands up about as tall as your dorsal fin does.
If you're high enough for the dorsal fin to be above the water, you can see the tail too.
But classically in human depictions of sharks, we just show the dorsal fin because it's the famous part, but you should typically, with most sharks that we would be fearing at the surface, you should show a tail fin because most of them have a very tall tail.
The discussion of shark tropes and shark portrayal in media feels particularly relevant to this discussion because perhaps no monster movie has a greater legacy than Jaws. I think that Jaws's legacy speaks for itself. It is the monster shark movie. It is the movie people still reference to this day as the reason they are afraid of sharks, or the reason that they don't like going in the ocean, or the source of their understanding of how they think sharks behave.
Yep.
Similar to our discussion on Deep Blue Sea, Jaws has a little bit of that scenario where, on the one hand, there is a little bit of appreciation for sharks shown, especially through the one particular character. There is the explanation given that this is a shark that is unusually large in an unusual place doing something that is unusual. But not only is the shark predominantly depicted in a monstery way, it is depicted very memorably in a monstery way.
Yes. Arguably better than the vast majority of other movie monsters.
Yes. The most famous scenes in this movie are the camera view from under the water as the shark comes upon people, the opening scene, which is truly terrifying, of a person getting attacked by the shark coming onto the boat to attack people, and even outside of the scene with the shark in it, the scene of Quint describing a horrible scenario of people getting eaten and picked off by sharks. This movie puts a lot of time and energy into delivering the message, sharks are dangerous monsters.
Well, and that's something I find so fascinating about this, because to go back to the book, just because it so heavily influences the movie. I read a big, long interview with Peter Benchley about the legacy.
Yeah.
And that he learned about sharks because his interest was sparked when those attacks happened. And that gave him the idea, just as a writer, oh, what a good story there is in a scenario like that.
Right.
Where a particularly large, aggressive shark centers itself on a small, vulnerable town.
Yes. And the movie does focus on the interesting story that comes. It's not just a movie about sharks eating people. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of human conflict and the arguments with the mayor about what to do about this.
And so many of the things that are referenced in the film are connected to truth.
Mm-hmm.
And at least to me, and it may just be because I've read the point of view of the author, they don't feel like they were twisted intentionally to demonize sharks.
Yeah.
It feels like interesting facts. Let's put those into this scary story and weave them in. Quint will be a survivor of the USS Indianapolis, which was a real shipwreck that is attributed as one of the largest in human recorded history, where we've documented largest shark attacks in human history, where survivors floating, many of them, and it said like between 50 to 150, but deaths are attributed to shark attacks.
Right.
Or maybe 25.
In the movie, it's like 800.
Yes, exactly.
Deaths in his telling of the story.
It's amped up, but like they're all connecting back to real world things, and it doesn't feel, at least as much as in Deep Blue Sea and in Meg and other movies that do this, that it's intentionally being warped to attack sharks or demonize sharks, but that it's being presented as, here's this information. Whoa, isn't that spooky?
Right. It has a similar feeling to what documentaries will sometimes do.
Yeah.
Where they'll have the shark or the snake or whatever animal, and it's on screen and it's actual footage, and it's presenting actual information about them, but the footage is dark and creepy, and the music is ominous and creepy, and the information they're choosing to talk about is how effective they are at killing, or their horrible venom, or whatever scary thing they're focusing on.
And the narrator's doing their best Vincent Price.
Yes.
Creeps upon its unsuspecting victim.
Lurking beneath the surface.
Yeah.
Just below the waves. Jaws kind of has that where it's like, what if we told a story that is, to some extent, sort of a plausible story.
Yes.
These are things, obviously, or, sharks aren't, like, jumping on boats to attack people.
Or at least that we consider, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of people who worked on Jaws didn't realize how out of scale it was.
Mm-hmm.
Who were like, yeah, no, I feel like I've heard a story of a shark doing something like, because there are stories of like sharks sinking boats, but like the only one I was ever able to find was one that bit a board and pulled the board off while trying to be wrangled and ended up popping a hole in the boat. It did not bite through the boat.
Right.
It crowbarred a board off. But like, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of people at the time of involved in making it, like the author writing the book, didn't realize they were actually grossly misportraying the animals.
Right. And that's one of the issues that comes up with a movie like this, is it starts with a place of misconstruing or misrepresented information that is already in the minds of the people creating the movie.
Yep.
And then a movie like this amplifies that.
One thing I found really interesting with this shark portrayal as compared to many, many others is they treat Jaws very much as a movie monster in the voracious appetite and the killing machine and the unstoppable force. So it's very simplistic in its motivations and its unstoppableness and like, you are now in my sights.
Mm-hmm.
It's Terminator vision. But they don't do a lot of the other things that so many other shark movies do, of like a drop of blood in the water guarantees the shark will be here.
Yeah, I was actually just going to say, they, shockingly enough, this movie doesn't do the blood in the water trope.
Like, they do use blood in the water, but the way it's actually used to try to attack sharks, which is chumming.
Yes.
Like,
you put a bunch of meat and food in the water to try to attract them.
Especially full of blood and oil from the fish. Like, it's not just chunks of meat, but blood and stuff for them to smell. But if you put out a bucket full of it, and maybe
right,
a shark will come.
Later on in the movie, they're throwing chum out into the water for all day long.
Yeah, like buckets full of it.
To try to get the shark's attention. This movie never has that moment that almost every movie with any sharks in it does, where a drop of blood falls in the water and we focus in on it ominously, because this means obviously a shark is about to show up.
Yes, it's inevitable now. You are on a time limit before this shark arrives. This one actually portrays trying to find a wild animal much more reasonably, in the fact that they are not able to find it most of the time they're looking for the shark.
Yes.
Because
they have to go hunting for
it. They have to go hunting for it. And even while actively looking, it takes them a day before they even get a glimpse. And then it's another, like, night fully.
Yeah, and then they lose it.
Yes. Because predators aren't just waiting on the edge of the screen at all times for the chance to pounce.
Well, and I think it's also noteworthy that in the movie, there are a number of circumstances where people get attacked by this shark, but the movie makes it very clear that it is largely the fault of the people for being there in the first place. Like, one of the major plot points of this movie is a shark showed up, ate a person, no one saw that coming. You shouldn't be in the water anymore. There's a lot of arguing about being in the water and whether or not this is based on a true behavior of sharks. The message in the movie is very much, if you didn't go in the water, this wouldn't have been. This shark isn't coming up onto shore. It's not lurking and waiting to pounce on people who are unsuspecting. It has decided it lives here now.
Yes.
And going out there is going into the path of danger.
Well, and they say at one point, which is, you know, we never get to find out if it would work this way, but it is proposed by Hooper, the marine biologist, that if you just stay out of the water for a little bit, the shark will leave.
Yeah. He says you either have to kill it or cut off its food source.
Yeah. If they hadn't kept going in, they wouldn't have had to kill this shark potentially, and Jaws would have just gone off somewhere else.
Yeah, yeah, they're driven to kill the shark partially by desperation because it's made very clear that the people in the town aren't going to stop putting people on the beach. And then also there is absolutely a degree of vengeance to it.
Yes.
Because now the shark's killed like 5 or 6 people, you know, over the course of the movie, and they're going to go out and get it so it can't hurt anybody anymore.
Yes. But I very much appreciate how animalistic the shark is most of the movie. At the end, it is very much a boss fight with this shark, and it is extremely man versus nature, the classic storytelling, you know, humans versus wildlife.
Another similarity that this movie has with Jurassic Park, same director, noteworthily enough, that for the first 2/3 of the movie or so, the animals are acting like animals, sometimes dangerous animals, but animals. And then we get to act 3 and we need something to be the monstrous villains of the movie. And so now you've got much more monstery behavior in your animals.
Yes. But like throughout most of the movie, the shark is random. Mm-hmm. It's unpredictable. Like who gets taken in the water? It's not like the Meg, where if you're in the water, you're going to get eaten.
Yes.
In here, and same with Deep Blue Sea, where you are being targeted by these. Jaws comes in, eats one person out of dozens.
Now, it is worth noting, at one point, it eats one person and one dog.
Yes, it does.
Now, to be fair, we don't see that it ate the dog.
Dog might be a bad swimmer.
But it ate that dog.
It ate that dog.
Jaws is real. It takes real strides. The first 3 deaths in this movie by the shark are 2 kids and a dog.
Yeah.
That's this movie that lays it all out on the table up front.
If you want to make sure people aren't rooting for this shark, you did it.
Yeah.
But like, it is not portrayed as if like, if you step into the water, Jaws senses it and is coming for you to kill. It's like it passes people by. And I ate a person. Now I'm going back out to sea. And they use that to the effect of horror in the movie. That is one of the things that makes us so nervous around predators. They're unpredictable.
Yes.
Is it going to, like, you hear those stories of people being approached by like mountain lions and stuff. And like the mountain lion just walking by.
Yeah.
Whew, why was this time fine and that other hiker got attacked? Who knows? But they put that in, that it's a predator. Yeah. It's just doing what it's doing.
Well, and there's a whole point in the film where there's a dozen boats out there on purpose throwing food into the water, trying to get its attention, and it doesn't show up. It's not attacking those boats.
And so there's a clear attempt to show it as an animal a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
The film unintentionally, and not because it's poorly written film, but the way it's portraying is kind of contradicting itself throughout the film, where it's attempting to show realistic shark stuff, but the things it thinks are realistic shark stuff very often aren't.
Yes.
And they often clash with the monster you've created to tell this story.
And then the shark becomes more monstrous over the course of the movie for the purposes of narrative, because as is so often the case, wild animals aren't good for story.
No.
Because they don't act in a dramatic way and they aren't predictable. And that's not, you know, the realistic quote unquote end of this movie is the shark just stops showing up and it leaves.
Exactly.
And that's a very boring ending.
Like the first time you shoot a harpoon into it, it's probably just going to leave. Yeah. Ow.
Yeah. Ouch.
Ouch. That
boat bad.
I'd leave if you shot a harpoon into me.
I will leave.
Yeah.
As it turns out, there's lots of food in the ocean. I will go find food somewhere else. There are literally plenty of fish in the sea.
Yes.
The shark doesn't need to be by this shoreline. So Jaws, like a lot of other good movies of this kind, like Jurassic Park, like a number of other ones, we talked about this a bit with like Lake Placid, the movie is building on real world portrayals, real world understandings of these animals, while mixing it in with movie techniques and narrative
devices,
and which ends up meaning the shark becomes a monstery villain. And most unfortunately, that's the stuff that sticks.
Yeah.
The most famous things about Jaws in the movie are the scariest parts of it. It's a horror movie. But also, the most famous thing about Jaws outside of the movie is that it made everybody afraid of sharks.
It was the first Hollywood blockbuster.
Yeah.
It was the first movie to, and if I remember right, by the original definition, to make all its money back in its opening week or weekend. I can't remember which one that is, but it made all its money back in its opening week.
Yeah.
And that was the first movie to ever do that.
Jaws became the highest grossing movie of all time when it came out. Before Jurassic Park did it, years later, Jaws comes out several years before Star Wars comes out. Actually, mm-hmm. only a couple of years before Star Wars. But this was a new thing for movies. And it is the quintessential example of how a film can embed ideas and feelings in the minds of the broader audience. The same way we've talked about how Jurassic Park, the things that are in Jurassic Park are now household knowledge about dinosaurs.
Yes.
The correct and incorrect stuff.
Yes.
Has become, everybody knows. Velociraptor was a name no one had ever heard. That dinosaur was named 70 years before Jurassic Park came out, and overnight it went from an extremely obscure scientific name to a household name.
Yes.
Everyone knows Velociraptor. Jaws came out, and suddenly everyone's perspective shifted.
Yeah.
On a group of animals that already did not have a great reputation in popular mindsets.
Yeah, it's not like we weren't scared of sharks before Jaws.
Right. It's not like it made everyone afraid of dolphins.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. There was already shark stories. There were already famous shark attack stories.
Absolutely.
You know, we were already painting shark faces on planes to instill that predatory and fear. We've been interacting with sharks for as long as humans have been going in the ocean. But this media-wide and pop culture portrayal of sharks wasn't a thing nearly to the degree that it is now before Jaws.
Mm-hmm.
When Jaws came out, beach sales, like income at beaches, plummeted the following year.
Yeah. This is one of the famous
economies.
This is one of the famous stories of Jaws, that people stopped going to beaches that year. I have heard varying takes on how true, like to what degree that actually happened.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But to some extent, there seems to have been, at least some people report, a consequence of Jaws coming out in terms of how people feel. And then it went on to influence multiple generations of movies.
Yeah, because it's an extremely good film, like quality film.
Yeah, sharks have had a hard time that the most famous movie about shark, like this movie about sharks is a horror movie, but also that it was directed by one of the most acclaimed directors in history. The music was made by the most famous composer in film history, who made all the most famous movie, like, there would have been scary shark music in this movie. It is fully unfair to sharks.
Yes.
That the composer who came up with what shark music sounds like is John Williams being told to make it scary.
Yes.
That's unfortunate for sharks. That's a really bad PR campaign for sharks. So this is, it hits on a lot of the shark tropes that are often shown in movies. It set the precedent for what sharks in pop culture were like ever since then. And unfortunately, it skews toward monstery, dangerous, scary sharks. I have spoken, and you worked at an aquarium, you've seen and you've talked on the podcast before about how people are influenced by this. I've spoken to marine biologists who have said the biggest obstacle in the way of ocean conservation is the movie Jaws.
Yep.
Like, you go up to people, to members of a community or to funders or donors or whoever, and you say, we want to protect sharks. And they say, like, Jaws?
Mm-hmm.
With the implication being, why would you want to protect them?
Yeah. We have a whole movie that tells us why we shouldn't. And, yeah, it's not like human-shark relations were great.
Right.
Before Jaws. Like, we were still messing up the oceans. We were still overfishing. But I have heard things referenced that, like, the idea of shark hunts to wipe out a shark that attacks someone became more common after.
It's a major plot point in this movie.
It's a major thing, and that, like, it's not that it didn't happen, but that, like, that sort of mentality of, and that you have people who are like, yeah, we should fish all the sharks out of the ocean.
Right.
The ocean would be better if we got rid of sharks. That mentality really was at least popularized, you know, not that I'm sure there were people who thought that beforehand, but as a wide public perception, that really was bred by this movie.
Because this movie is not only now what you expect from sharks, but your mental image of how you react to sharks.
Yes. and that, you know, one of the heroes of the movie, though, you know, a morally ambiguous and gray one,
sure,
is a professional shark hunter.
Yeah.
Who has a personal vendetta against sharks because they killed many of his friends and crewmen. So, like, it has really colored not just the way we view sharks from a distance, you know, not just that there are people who are now scared of sharks more often, but the actual way we interact with and treat them as living animals. Like, literally, yeah, shark deaths went up after Jaws came out, and it has been a notable shift in their conservation since that movie.
Only because we've been doing it for the last couple, giving these movies a shark portrayal rating, which we didn't talk about beforehand. I just said it.
I love
but
it.
I think it's fun. On a scale of 1 to 10, I think we said The Meg was like a 2, and Deep Blue Sea, I think we gave it a 3.
Yeah, something, or maybe a 4 or something.
Maybe a 4. I think Jaws manages to earn like a 5.
Yeah.
Maybe even a 6.
I can confidently say 5.
Yeah.
I think 6 could be potential because there are some points in it where it bumps way up for me. Like, for instance, there's a whole scene where it's Chief Brody looking through shark science books. And it's definitely playing into that it's amping up his anxiety and fear because... But a bunch of them are just pictures of actual photographs of sharks.
Yep, diagrams of how they behave.
Yep, diagrams of their anatomy. He's learning and reading about it. We get a lot of shark facts shared throughout the film that are legitimate and just normal shark facts.
Yep.
So, like, there's a bunch of parts of the movie where it's like, I've not seen more recent movies about sharks where we have better photos and film.
Yep.
Use actual photo and film of a shark to, like, you did more than most other shark movies since you.
Yes.
And this was before we had really, really nice high HD quality shark documentaries.
Now you can call up BBC and say, hey, can we use some of your footage?
Can we get any of your B-reel of sharks?
Unfortunately, all the good stuff is so heavily overshadowed by how much intentional and unintentional monstery portrayal the sharks and sharks as a whole get in the movie.
Which is why 5 feels right to me.
I put it at a 5.
Because for every good thing it does a bad thing to counteract it. Yep. And unfortunately, most of the good stuff's not remembered.
Yeah, exactly.
None of that is what got famous about the movie. Yeah.
You're not having dreams about those parts.
No.
You're having nightmares about the other parts. The most unfortunate part about giving this movie a completely arbitrary 5 on our completely arbitrary scale is that it's probably the highest any movie would ever get on our scale.
Oh, yeah.
Of shark portrayal.
Nope.
Jaws does it pretty darn good as these movies go.
Which is so fascinating considering the legacy it now has left behind and the other films it has inspired that. Given all of that, the original was not actually even as bad as what the portrayals that followed it.
But like we've been saying, the main takeaway from Jaws was sharks scary and dangerous and monstery.
Yep.
And that has been how popular culture has leaned ever since then.
Yes.
Very much like we've talked about with Jurassic Park, some of the most memorable and widely celebrated stuff from Jurassic Park is the dinosaurs fighting and being scary, and so the rest of the franchise has tended to include more and more in that direction.
Yep.
Besides the sharks in the movie, which incidentally are the only animals in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, usually these movies have like something else to be mentioned.
No.
I don't think there are seagulls.
There's seagulls. There's a couple of dogs.
There's a couple of dogs. There's some dead fish.
There's dead fish.
But there's really not. This movie really focused in on what the star animals were.
We get a mention of a moray eel.
We do. We also get mention of Ray.
Yes.
At one point.
Yeah, that it might be a ray that's fighting the hook.
There is more science in this movie to discuss, predominantly that we have a scientist character, Matt Hooper, who is an oceanographer, marine scientist who comes in from the mainland. And he has a whole bunch of like science-y equipment and he's talking about sharks and such, which simply by virtue of the movie that he's in makes him one of the most prominent movie scientists of all time.
Yep. Well, he's also portrayed by Richard Dreyfuss, and it's like, you're a very notable actor.
Yes.
That played a very notable character in a very notable movie. So it's an extremely famous character now.
And as far as science and scientist portrayals goes, not bad.
Yeah.
Like we said, they are, when they go out looking for the shark, they are using some techniques that you would use when trying to attract wildlife, you know, chumming the water and stuff like that.
He's very measured a lot of the time in the way he's discussing the situation. You know, there's definitely dramatic moments of describing them as eating machines.
Sure.
And whatnot. But typically it's not just doom and gloom. Even when Hooper is like, you've still got a problem in your hand, it's not like, you don't understand.
Right.
There's a great white shark out here.
You've got a problem because there's a shark out there that is in the habit of eating
yes.
people. These are the facts.
Exactly.
He has a similar feeling to a lot of the other good scientist portrayals in movies, like we talked about in Tremors or in Jurassic Park, where he's a scientist, but that's not his defining feature.
Mm-hmm.
He's a character. He's a multidimensional character who happens to also be a scientist.
Yes.
Which makes him feel more like a real person, which is refreshing for scientist portrayals on film.
Yeah, not every aspect of his personality comes back to being a marine
right.
biologist or a shark researcher. He's also cocky, and he's also...
Yeah, he's young, and
young,
he's impetuous.
And
he also hates Quint.
Yes.
Fully justifiably.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And so there's a whole bunch of... Yeah, you are a person, and your profession is scientist. Yes.
And maybe because of that, or at least in a similar vein... He does avoid a lot of the typical movie tropes
mm-hmm.
That they'll give to scientists.
Well, I also like that they balance his knowledge a bit where everything he says isn't just guaranteed to be true. Like,
yeah.
There's a lot of things he says that are correct. You know, he identifies the marks on the body as shark attack, not boat propeller.
Sure. He takes measurements of the tiger shark
yeah.
and says this isn't the same. The bite size doesn't match up with what we saw on the victim.
Exactly. And like, he ends up being right on those, but there's a reason for it. He's not just pulling it out of thin air.
Yes.
He makes an analysis and an inspection of something, and then yeah,
these are
draws
things
a conclusion.
Deduced
mm-hmm.
accurately.
And but then we see, like, when they're on the boat, he's disagreeing with Quint because he's condescending toward mm-hmm. him, and he's like, it's not a shark. You don't have a shark. And then turns out to be wrong.
Yes.
So I like that he is flawed even in his expertise to a degree, that he's not just all-knowing vaunt, yes. you know, font of knowledge.
And I also like, because there is a bit of a characterization later on in the movie of Quint, who is not a scientist, he's not a marine biologist, but he is very experienced
mm-hmm.
in tracking and hunting sharks. And Hooper, who is very knowledgeable broadly about sharks and who does, you know, research on sharks, there is this clashing between them. And at times it is definitely portrayed, at least especially through the view of these characters, as your book smarts
yes.
don't measure up to real world experience. And I'm happy to see that as the movie goes on, that turns out to be just what Quint thinks.
Yes.
We do get to see both of them being right and working together.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, Quint does say, all right, let's try it your way.
What do your bookmarks, your book smarts say?
Yeah, and I think that it's very easy for movies to fall clearly on one side or the other of either the scientist is right all the time, even if they have no idea, they've never been in a situation like this, they are the source of just plot information.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're just some nerd from a lab and you think you know what you're talking about.
You've got knowledge but not experience.
Right. So have a seat. You know, you don't really know what you're talking about. It's that working class. He calls it working class hero
mm-hmm.
mentality. And Hooper calls it that because he's being condescended to. And this movie manages to not harp on one side or the other.
Yeah.
As often happens with scientist characters.
Yeah, it's both have something to learn from the other, which is, yeah, a very refreshing, because that's absolutely true. Like,
yeah, you know,
my book knowledge on Crocs has a whole bunch of value to it. If you actually catch and wrangle gators out of people's pools, I have a ton of questions for you.
Oh, yeah,
it's
absolutely.
I know more about their evolution, but you have things that I don't have.
And I feel like I've said this on the podcast before. I'm terrible at catching snakes.
Mm-hmm.
I have a number of stories of myself completely failing to pick up a snake and letting it get away from me in a situation where someone more, even a bit more experienced, would have absolutely gotten a hold of it.
Yes.
And in the movie, there is a part where we see that Hooper is young and overconfident, and Quint calls him out and say, and about not admitting when he's wrong.
Yes.
And it makes him feel like a new, he feels like a scientist that I would know.
Yeah, like,
I've met like, scientists like this person.
I've been this academic also, before.
I have been this person before.
I've been at that point where I put way too much value in my knowledge over other people's. And it is refreshing to be shown, for a movie to show, yes, that is a flaw scientists can have.
Mm-hmm.
It is not insurmountable, nor does it invalidate the knowledge they do have.
Yes, and it isn't, this is how scientists are. Mm-hmm. This is how this person
is. This is how Hooper is.
This is how Hooper is. And it also helps that Hooper is up against Quint, who is the biggest jerk. Quint is awful.
Yep,
he's a bunch of words I won't say on the podcast.
But a delightfully entertaining character.
He's a very entertaining character. But when Hooper gets mad, and I was like, yeah, obviously.
I would be too.
I wouldn't have gotten on the boat with that guy.
So it's a very good portrayal of a scientist as a person. And it works that academic background in, and even the privileged background in, because he's a well-off scientist. So
yeah, he's rich. Mm-hmm. He explains that he's very wealthy. And well, now he is. It is interesting that they describe that he is essentially self-funded.
Yes.
He pays for all of his fancy equipment, and then he goes out, you know, researching sharks and such, sort of in that vein of a Charles Darwin,
yeah,
or those sort of historical figures.
Have family money.
Yeah, who were only able to do that kind of stuff because they happened to be in a great position.
Yes.
That allowed them to do that.
Which is extremely famous in historical scientists like Darwin and other people who went on expeditions, but is still very commonly the case nowadays of,
mm-hmm.
yeah, if you're more well off, you can afford to not work and go to college or not have to worry about loans or scholarships, and is still a very true portrayal of the academic society.
But again, it's not the main characterization of him. It's a thing that happens to be true.
Yeah.
This is, again, back to that, the way he is a character first and a scientist second, which helps him feel much more well-rounded and prevents him from being a one-dimensional scientist trope in the movie.
And I like the way he portrays the science he does introduce into the movie, because it is not constantly given as, and here are the facts that now that they have come from my mouth, a scientist, are true. Even though story-wise, that is still often the case for the film, is this is, we're giving you exposition through the guise of science discussion, because that's typically what you do with most dialogue in a story is we're explaining to you what's going on in this setting. But he portrays it in a very measured way a lot of the times. When they talk about rogue sharks, Brody brings it up because he read about it. And
yeah,
then,
Brody's asking him about it.
He's like, what is it called? Rogue shark? So that's a thing that can happen. And he goes, it's a theory that I happen to agree with.
Yes.
And I love that. Like, it's currently in the hypothetical stage, which is what he meant by that in the movie, but like, it is a hypothesis, an idea. I am one of the scientists who adheres to this idea, that I think it holds up.
Yes.
And there are, when the shark is caught, when the tiger shark's caught, he's like, it could be the shark.
Yep.
I'm not saying it's not the shark, but it has a smaller mouth than I would expect from what you showed me, and we won't know until we cut it open. So I am not willing to say you've caught the shark.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very reasonable response and a very scientific approach of, based on what you've shown me, I'm not convinced.
Yeah. And even further in the movie, he grabs the tooth.
Yes.
Right? He goes to investigate, collect more evidence, come back and present, this is what I've found, this is what I've concluded, this is what we need to do next.
Yes.
He also has a bunch of science-y equipment and is doing science-y stuff. I don't think we get a whole lot of explanation of what a lot of that equipment is for.
Mm-mm.
He's got sort of a shark sensing machine that helps him detect that there are things in the water.
Yeah, just the fish radar, the fish sonar, which is like, seems like the same kind that's used almost like fishing vessels. Mm-hmm. That's just, it detects, and he's like, that's probably a school of fish.
Yep.
As it bings, and then he gets another bing and goes, nope, That's something else is in the water ahead of us.
He's got an injection of, he says what chemical it is.
Yeah, it's some poison.
Some sort of poison that is meant to take out the shark. He also has the compressed air canisters. And I don't know if we ever get an explanation.
Those are scuba tanks. That's when he goes into the cage.
Yes, you're right. I had compartmentalized those.
They don't actually mention it again when they actually get used.
Yes, you're right. That's
what
that is.
That's why they're there, so that he can go down in the shark cage that he brought with
and
him.
And he has a shark cage, which is a thing from the real world that is, I assume, used in research. I don't.
Oh yeah,
it's not just like for tourism. You go down in the shark cage.
No, it absolutely. That's the slot that's in those cages is so that you can put a camera out, and that's how you get most of your a lot of your shark footage in old documentaries for sure. I'm sure there are ones gotten different ways nowadays that we have progressed in how we understand to do that.
Camera robots.
Mm-hmm. It looks like a normal shark cage. It just, they didn't make up like a movie, which I appreciate so much when that happens, because so often movies like to make a movie version of it.
Right. Like the lab equipment is this complex, ridiculous. And it's like, that's just an MRI scanner. What you're describing is a machine that already exists.
And it gets the point of sci-fi to where it's like, we have the best version. It's like, cool. What you just showed doesn't exist.
And this is not a sci-fi movie.
No.
Like our last two shark movies that we've talked about are sci-fi movies.
Yes.
This is very much not.
Very grounded in all regards, really, except for how powerful and extreme the shark is.
Yeah. So yeah, Jaws fits this, goes on the list of movies with pretty good scientists.
Yeah.
It's not perfect. He's got a lot of fancy equipment that doesn't get explored or explained in a whole lot of depth. We don't get to see him doing much science on the ground or in the water, as it were. But we do get to see him applying some of his equipment in pretty reasonable ways for the scenario. He presents a lot of good information, and some of it's, you know, a little bit dramatic or a little bit misleading, but he is presenting it in a knowledgeable but not overly authoritative way.
Yes. Yeah, I think the closest we see to him doing science is when he runs to get the shark tag to attach to the first barrel that gets shot connected to Jaws. They shoot these barrels that they're supposed to keep the shark at the surface by floating.
Right. They don't work because the shark is a big monster.
He's just so swole. And the implication behind shark tags is it's a way to collect movement data. Connect these tags to sharks. They are either a way to ID the shark when they're caught again, but often to document their movement, or at least data about what depths they went to. Like the earliest ones didn't have satellite sync.
Yeah, I was going to say, it used to be, I believe, you'd put the tag on the shark and then hopefully find it again someday.
Yes.
And now you can collect information from it. Where did it come from? Where did it go?
And it can give you things. It can sometimes often record, this is the lowest temperature that it hit while on the shark. This is the highest temperature.
Right.
This is the deepest.
The fastest it moved.
Yes.
Nowadays, they have, GPS.
Yes.
So we can actually track, where is that shark right this minute? It is over here.
And it's usually, I think, still often only when they come close enough to the surface for the signal to reach out of the ocean.
Yes. We got to use those blue signals.
Yep,
that's the problem.
So you get these, hopscotch tracking of shark was here, and then a week later it was here, so some point it's moved between those two. They never acknowledge it, though, other than the scene showing him go get it and put it on.
It shows up again for a second.
Yeah,
when the shark's coming back.
But they don't get, notification or anything, so it's used more for a visual for us, the audience. But I do like that there was an implication of where he was still in researcher mode of, if we're going to shoot something onto this shark, I'm going to tag it.
Yes.
Because this is the biggest shark I've ever seen.
We can track
biggest great
it that
white
way.
I've ever seen. And we
and
can get
also,
some data.
We're trying to find it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other, we're trying to track it down. This might help us do that.
He mentions that he's going to be going on an expedition.
Yep.
For
on the,
research.
On the Aurora, I think he calls the boat.
So we don't get to see much or learn what his research is on, but all in all, pretty solid scientist.
Yeah. Jaws is a fascinating movie for a lot of reasons, even just from the perspective of science in movies, animal wildlife portrayal in movies. There is so much fascinating conversation to be had about this. Listeners, if you have thoughts that you'd like to share on these topics, as always, feel free to reach out and join us on the Discord, leave a comment, something like that. But there's one more thing to do. As always with Silver Screen Science, our goal is not just to pick apart what the movie did wrong and bugs us about it, but to talk about the broader picture of science portrayal in film. We think that's more interesting. We think that's less often explored than the what it got wrong, what it got right. There's a lot of content like that out there. We want to do something a little different, but we also want to do that thing. Mm-hmm. That thing is fun. It's fun to just pick a thing and get upset about a little tiny thing that they got wrong in the movie. So at the end of every Silver Screen Science episode, we give ourselves a little chance to spend just a few minutes being overly nitpicky and annoyed about something tiny in the movie.
To be obnoxious.
Will, what is your mini rant for Jaws? First of all, how dare you impugn the honor of this movie.
But, you know, that being said. The mine is a real particular thing that might be answered in the film if there's something I missed in a scene.
Mm.
While they're hunting for Jaws, Quint uses a harpoon gun with rope attached, a line attached that connects to these big yellow flotation barrels. Harpoons into the shark. Shark pulls the barrel off the boat, and then that is supposed to tire the shark out by keeping them at the surface and not allowing them to escape as easily and be able to track them while the barrel's bobbing around. Jaws takes the first barrel and dives and disappears with it until it shows back up during their singing number and attacks the boat. They see the barrel and try to get a hold of it, and then later on shoot three more barrels on, and they keep talking about there being now three barrels on the shark and not four. So unless that first barrel got disconnected when they tried to grab the rope, but
Jaws, he ate it.
Yeah, like
ate it and now therefore is not floating.
Yes, and so it something happened to the first barrel, but I don't know what happened to the first barrel.
We're putting out a call.
There should be four barrels got shot.
Where's the fourth barrel?
Where's the first barrel that should be the fourth?
Where's that barrel, Quint?
So like it's either got forgotten in the editing or something, or there's a somewhere in that scene when they're grabbing the rope and Jaws comes up and bites at them while they're trying to grab the barrel and it, you know, cuts their hand a little bit. Somewhere in that scene it's shown that, oh yeah, it came loose. It came off of Jaws when he did that.
You are upset that we're missing out on Jaws getting to go down with four barrels.
It's just, you know, counting is, they're not counting right.
I've got a mini rant, and it is also something that is very nitpicky, although it is about shark science in particular. The shark, who we've been calling Jaws, which is not its name, the shark in the movie is said to be a great white shark.
Yes.
They find a tooth that is a great white shark tooth. We also see the shark, and it appears to be a great white shark.
Yep.
Hooper identifies it as being 20 feet long. Quint identifies it as being 25 feet long. We never get an official measurement because there's not enough left of the shark to measure at the end.
Yeah, the front 5 feet get blown off.
As we discussed, this is sort of the upper echelon for real life ranges for great white sharks. Throughout the entire movie, all the characters refer to this shark as he.
Yep.
Indicating indirectly that this would be a male shark.
Which I think I even slipped up in a hand when I was saying it.
If this is a 25-foot great white shark, it is almost certainly not a male shark.
No.
That is almost certainly a female shark because they get bigger.
Yes,
because
female sharks traditionally across sharks are bigger than males, and with great whites, significantly. Like a full-grown female great white and a full-grown male, the female will almost always double the weight of the male.
Yes.
Even if it's not double the length, they are much more massive.
Now, there is something to be said here about the way that we portray monsters and the gendering of things in general pop culture. I think he is scarier.
Yeah.
Just in a cultural perspective, it's also the default. But in this case, that's probably not very scientifically correct.
No.
It reminds me of, and I don't remember if we brought this up. I think we did when we've talked about Jurassic Park. They do this in Jurassic Park, the scene. One of Grant's famous lines in the movie, T-Rex doesn't want to be fed, he wants to hunt.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, Grant, it was explained to you.
Yes, you've already been in the lab.
You know. That's not a male T-Rex. This also came up in Godzilla 98.
Yep.
A very unusual he. I've got, listen, the problem is that we're trying to assign labels on all these animals.
Yep. Yeah. The only scene that kind of contradicts is there are some images of like actual film of a real great whites.
Right.
In the movie.
The shark, for the most part, is an animatronic, a series of animatronic sharks, but there is some footage in the movie.
Yes. And one of them, which if I remember right, I think it was filmed for the film, while they were filming, a shark got caught in the lines of the cage that they had put in the water. And so there's the famous scene at the end of the shark attacking Hooper in the cage, mm-hmm. of it like spinning and rolling above the cage and thrashing around. That actually happened during filming. A real shark got accidentally caught in the lines and freaked out, and the footage was still captured. And so they went, we're using that in the movie because mm-hmm. that's dramatic. And in that scene, it is indeed a male because I could catch one frame of the claspers yep. going by.
You can see him. That is another thing that we didn't mention earlier in this movie. This movie does use some actual sharks.
Yes.
There is the dead tiger shark that is hanging from the thing. I don't know if that means you had to kill a tiger shark or if you happened to find one. This is the 70s. This movie is being filmed
yes.
a mere 10 years after Thunderball.
Yes.
Which we have discussed previously on the podcast.
I feel like I remember learning a thing about that, but I don't actually know. So if anyone does know, please say
yeah,
so.
Let us know.
I feel like there is information out there of where that shark came from.
This has been the third episode of our Silver Screen Science Sharks series across April of this year. Check out the other two episodes if you haven't already. And we will be releasing more thoughts episodes specifically for patrons on our Patreon, where we will talk just about our personal opinions of the movies. And on May 5th at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, we will be having a Silver Screen Science live stream.
Yay.
Our first ever, because this is another series we do, and it's a topic that we like to have the opportunity to discuss with our audience. So do come join us for our Silver Screen Science live stream on May 5th and talk with us about sharks in movies and creatures in movies and just movie science stuff in general.
Yay.
It has been an absolute pleasure to get to do Jaws.
It's been so much fun.
This has been way up on the list for a long. This is one of the go-to movies for something like Silver Screen Science.
Yep.
It's been on the list for a long time. I'm glad that we finally found the excuse and the opportunity to do it.
Yeah.
And with that, barring more thoughts and our live stream, we return you all to our regularly scheduled podcast program. Episodes coming out through the year. Our Spotlight series is ongoing. The third episode will be coming out shortly after this episode airs, where we're interviewing other science communicators and paleo podcasters. Also, by the time you're listening to this, if you're listening to it shortly after it comes out, Croc and Snake Month are coming up.
They sure are.
So there's a whole bunch of other stuff that's coming up going on over the course of the year. It's an exciting time to be in the Baskin Coil.
Yeah, you go ahead and re-listen to Lake Placid and Anaconda and just finish the trilogy.
There you go.
Of big aquatic predators.
And now we're going to record more thoughts.
Yep.
To put it on Patreon. It is going to be, this feels like it's been a long, this is a big discussion.
Oh yeah. Well,
we're going to need a bigger podcast.
There's more to say.
I did it. I made a Jaws reference. I managed to sneak one. I just sneak it in there. Like a doll's eyes. Bye everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Common Descent Podcast. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and check our WordPress blog for pictures and links after each episode. Huge thanks to our patrons whose support helps keep this podcast running and who get access to bonus goodies on Patreon. The song you're hearing is called On the Origin of Species by Protodome, which we found at ocremix.org. Thanks again for listening. We hope you'll join us next time.